the best class I had, which is the hands-on, was we did this TV production class my senior year at Miami, which was from 95 to 96, where you got to be a director, you got to be a technical director, you got to be a producer, you got to be a news reporter, you got to be a segment producer, and I still remember it.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Beyond High Street. This is David Schwab. If you are an NFL fan, a football fan, this is the time of year that gets everyone excited, the NFL draft. And our pod today, Charlie Uke, senior coordinating producer for the NFL draft, the NFL Network. He's been at the NFL Network for almost a dozen years, and he's really the guru, almost running the NFL draft from a production element for the NFL Network, as he says in the pod, almost like a conductor for an orchestra, or at least that's what he explains to his family when they're not really sure what he does. 20-plus years in television and production. He talks about in the pod that it was even a class in school, on a professor in school, that guided him in this direction, and got him in front of the camera, behind the camera, made him direct and produce, to learn all sides of the medium, and has been in TV starting with CBS Sports in 1997 all the way through to the NFL Network now in 2018. Lucky to catch up with him as the NFL draft begins tomorrow down in Dallas, Texas.
As we prepare for the NFL draft here on NFL Network, my life is basically consumed by 32 teams, how we're presenting the broadcast, and as we look forward to the event itself in Dallas. So every day is, we get here pretty early. We're in Los Angeles. So we get here about 8 o'clock. I guess that's pretty early. And there are really no hours until we're done with what we need to do, whether it's talking to announcers and talent, whether it's mapping out the first round, whether it's dealing with a new layer we have, which is a simulcast with Fox, and talking to their executives and their talent, meetings surrounding what the event's going to look like and what it's going to feel like, not just internally, but with the league itself, with ESPN, with all our partners and salespeople. So as you can imagine, it's quite a load. Some of it's fun, some of it's not, but everything is necessary as we get ready for 8 p.m. Eastern on Thursday, April 26th.
When do you think you had your first meeting? Kind of what month was your first meeting talking about the draft?
Our first meeting internally in NFL Network to talk about the draft was in the fall, late September, early October. We start slotting a big board just like teams do. Once you get like a couple of weeks of college football in, you can see who's kind of flashing, who's not flashing, playing well. You look at seniors mostly, but some underclassmen. And then we make a board of about 100 to 150 names. And kind of go from there as we prepare for, when the calendar flips for us, we get ready for our college all-star games, which includes East-West Shrine Game, the Senior Bowl, and then the Combine in late February, early March, and the draft. So our first meetings happen like late September, early October. We put the names together. It's truly like a team. We have a big board. It's not a war room necessarily, but we have a big board. We slot it out. We put all this stuff on a Microsoft Word document, distribute out to just key members of the draft team that we have, which is small in number. I think that's, people probably think there's maybe dozens or even double figure names that work on the draft for us. Really, it's about five guys early on. And then it expands to the hundreds and hundreds of people once we get to the event in Dallas. But it's, the beginning points of it is really just five people as we kind of map out the editorial.
Yeah, I was going to ask that question. As the teams are, they've got their big boards because they're trying to make some decisions in 6 months on who to draft or not. You're creating that big board so that I imagine editorially you're starting to already pull content and already think about the stories and the features of those people that ultimately will get drafted.
Exactly. And that's how we can get stories like, for instance, everyone knows about Shaquem Griffin from UCF, the linebacker who had his hand amputated when he was 4 years old. That story was pretty common before we got into the season. But there's other good stories that we dug deep into that we'll see, on our network, on socially and digitally on NFL.com for us. Look, there's a story of Penn State wide receiver Deshaun Hamilton, which we've discovered. He takes care of his older autistic brother. His mom is a breast cancer survivor, and we thought that was a compelling story to tell. There's so many, just once you get into the layers of what we want to do, and you know, as you know, and everyone knows, that are fans of the NFL and football in general, quarterbacks drive this discussion always. It's like, does my team have a quarterback? Do they not? So we put a lot of guys in a room that were number one overall picks, and we had them basically give advice to this new quarterback class. So you're going to hear from the likes of, you know, Michael Vick, Drew Bledsoe, like Eli Manning. And I mean, they weren't necessarily all number one overall picks, but there's just Vince Young, Brian Leaf, giving advice to this draft class. So that was a neat thing that we thought about early on to make sure, okay, how can we get all these guys to sit down and put this thing together? So that's really when it starts, the storytelling. And then again, the event itself, it's like a game. You just follow it. A team's either going to make a pick, or they're going to trade a pick, or they're going to trade the pick. So you just follow along editorially what's going on, which is probably why I think people are drawn to it, just because they don't know what this player is going to be for their team. But the hope involved is that at some point they're going to be good. But understanding the fact that the first round's a 50-50 coin flip, who knows if they're going to be good or not? And if anyone knows that answer, they're probably, you know, probably not on the phone right now.
What? Certainly not you.
Not me.
What?
Yeah.
So you've been at the NFL Network for more than 10 years or so.
Yeah, 2006 is when I started.
So what do you think about looking back to 2006 to the broadcast of an NFL draft, or covering the NFL draft when there was no such thing as social media, or if there was, it was pretty limited in what was there, to
sure.
How you cover it now, and how that is either enhanced, hurt, helped, made it easier, or more, I guess, confusing.
I think overall, specifically when you look at social media, there's positives and negatives to everything. The positives being you can get your content out there, you can promote, you can reach a broader audience. Hopefully that's, you know, using their computer or phone in addition to watching it on traditional television, or vice versa. I think if you use it as a content pusher and a promotional vehicle, it definitely helps us. On the flip side too, obviously there's some negative involved, which is, for us specifically, there's a couple of individuals that do get the picks beforehand, that tip the picks and put the picks out there, which we and ESPN have agreed not to do, to kind of keep some sort of compelling television presentation. As you know, in the Oscars, no one really tweets that someone won the best actor right before they actually announced the best actor.
Yep.
We try to keep that the same, but you know, there are other people who don't necessarily work for us or ESPN that don't feel the same way, and they're allowed to do whatever they want, and we understand that. I don't think it necessarily ruins the sanctity of the draft, not that this is some holy event, but you know, we want to make sure that it's a surprise and that the reveal is on television. But I think those are the positives and negatives too. And the other thing I would say is the one thing that social has changed as far as the event goes is how news happens. I think we recall a couple of years ago that image, you know, of Laramie Tunsil wearing a gas mask bong that kind of resonated throughout, and he became a massive storyline due to social, because you know that photo was released during the night of the draft, and that probably affected his draft stock and why he fell. So that definitely, in a way, affected not only our coverage but the actual, you know, the actual business at hand that night. So, but at the end of the day, I think with the NFL's reach socially, we take it as, we take the positive spin on it, and then we can do a lot of things, you know, as I said, pushing the content out and promoting the fact that the most important thing right now is pushing towards Thursday at 8:00 Eastern, to watch NFL Network and Fox.
And when you get through the draft, which will come and go with some sleepless nights ahead, what happens
yeah.
Monday? What's life for you like Monday?
Well, the good thing is I get to be off for a week. I'll do nothing. And then we're going to get back at it. But, you know, the week of May 7th, we're in planning mode again for Hall of Fame, training camp, preseason. So it really doesn't end. There's probably the slowest month for the league is that little lull between May and June, but it starts ramping up in July.
And getting back,
look,
go ahead.
I'm No, I mean, I was going to say, I'm fortunate to be in the position I'm in, to work for the company I work for, just because I understand that it's you know, working. It's not real work when you think about it, and I don't mean to disparage anything that the hundreds of men and women do here at the NFL, but at the end of the day, we get to cover a sport that has mass wide popularity, that there's a passionate fan base for across 32 teams. You know, I'm lucky in the sense that I've gone to a lot of Super Bowls, I've gone to a lot of drafts, and you know, having had those opportunities and seeing the faces of people when you tell them you work for the NFL or you tell them you we're going to cover your team this way, that's probably the most rewarding part. So I understand how fortunate and lucky I am, and it's been fun. So it's really not a job when you think about it. So I've been very lucky.
Yeah, agreed. You used the word storytelling, and I'd say half the people I talk to in the pod talk about storytelling. Let's go back now a little bit to Oxford, and even prior to NFL Network in college, when did you realize storytelling was how important storytelling was, and or even going back to when you're 18 years old, what were you thinking about of where you wanted to work or what did you want to do?
I think when I was at Miami, I knew I was very focused on the fact that I didn't want a 9-to-5 job. I didn't want to be in business. I didn't want to carry a briefcase. And I love sports. And I knew that I thought I could write a little bit. At one point, I thought I could present on air, but truly you get humbled real quick how hard it is to read something on camera, let alone how bad I looked on camera. So that kind of went away real quick, but I knew that there was a passion with sports. I'd loved sports all my life. So by the time I got to my junior year at Miami, I was already declared, mass communications major in journalism. I kind of knew this is what I wanted to do. I wanted to produce sports in some manner. So the opportunities that I got that, as a one-man band, shooting and reporting stuff on the football team when Coach Randy Walker was there, and he was, rest in peace. He was the nicest man. He had one man band interviews where I was the camera guy asking the questions, doing the shots, editing it myself. And that's what I knew. This is what I want to do. I want to get feedback from head coaches. I want to know their emotion, how they're feeling before a game, after a game. And then it's just like the best class I had, which is the hands-on, was we did this TV production class my senior year at Miami, which was from 95 to 96, where you got to be a director, you got to be a technical director, you got to be a producer, you got to be a news reporter, you got to be a segment producer. And I still remember, it was a stupid piece if you look at it, but there was a big controversy back then because Blimpy Subs opened up next to Subway, I believe. And I did the rivalry piece, basically. And I talked to everybody, the managers in there and the people going there, and why did they decide that? And I had a lot of fun with it. I don't know how well it really turned out when you think about it, but I realized, I'm like, okay, there's something there. And I know it's kind of weird to say, okay, you did a piece on two sandwich shops, but I realized, like, okay, how does this work for me if I'm talking sports here? What if this was Yankees Red Sox? What if this was, Bears Packers? So every little thing that I did, I learned, and I took a little chunk of that and be like, okay, how is this going to affect the way I present sports stories like this? Where you got to know, you got to get every angle. You can't just cover one side of it. You truly do want to be fair and balanced. You do want to get the most access you can possibly want, because that's what people are craving. Like, they don't want, anybody can have an opinion. Whose opinion matters more? And those are the sound bites, and those are the visuals for the access you want to get. So that's, I kind of knew early on, and then I was lucky enough. I mean, I was super lucky to get the jobs that I got just based on connections from a Miamian, actually, who got my first job at CBS Sports in 1997. So everything worked out for a reason. Again, I'm just beyond grateful and fortunate to be where I am. But yeah, early on, I kind of knew what I wanted to do. I was lucky in that aspect.
I think everyone would. I'd watch that rivalry show. Maybe you could do 30 minutes on who's going to win Puddle Pool, or should we go to Aussies or Skippers back in
right.
96, or was it Harry's dining hall, or put them up against the other guys. That would be a fun little bit on a college campus. So you said CBS Sports in 97. So you really, from junior year declaring and then senior year with this TV production class that you took, you've gone TV for the past 20 plus years.
Yeah, and right after I graduated in 96, I did intern at a local Chicago station for free for that fall, so that was fun, though. I got to go in the locker room, eat food, and, you know, interview the Blackhawks and the Bulls, which is kind of cool. But my real job in the 97, so yeah, I've been doing, it's about 22 years worth of stuff. It doesn't seem that long because I still feel young. I'm still an idiot, probably. People who tell you that I work with.
It's pretty interesting. But Jenny Rooney. Sorry, keep going. I interrupted there.
No, go ahead.
It's interesting. Jenny Rooney, who writes the CMO column for Forbes, who went to Miami with us and has been in journalism for 20 plus years. She too has been a writer. She left school wanting to write and has been writing for 20 plus years. And it's an interesting kind of commonality of you doing the same. Most people that I've talked to haven't been at the same job, but maybe it's not, you haven't either. You've just been in the same discipline, and you knew early on that it was communications and television and a way to convey a message or get a message out. So that makes sense. I got to go back to something you said earlier because I'm curious if there's a specific example when you said of you were humbled very early on about being on air. Was there a specific moment or something you taped that you thought, oh yeah, that's not for me?
No, it's just when you for the first time, and back then, you know, technology, let's obviously what isn't as good as it is now. The first time you really see and hear yourself outside of yourself, you just kind of go, oof. And if I would look back at it now, I mean, it was an awful tie. I'm going to guess I weighed 35 pounds more than I did than I do now. And that's all due to SDS pizza.
I was just going to say SDS pizza.
Let's not get ourselves. I mean, there's Tuesday sub deals still exist, I think.
Skipper's bottom. I think Skipper's bottom in the last couple of years.
Skipper's had great fries too. But you know, you just kind of know, like, hey man, I got a face for radio, and then that's fine. Or let's just stay behind the scenes. Not to say that everything's based on looks, because it's not. But I just knew that this and I wasn't comfortable. You know what I mean? That's what I mean. Like, you get humbled pretty quick. Like, it's not just for all the people that I work with that are on air, for all the ribbing that I give them. Like, hey, you're just, you know, just read the words on the prompter, or just get me to from A to B. There is some sort of skill that is involved, and the best ones are the best for a reason. And I've worked with a lot of great ones, and they know who they are. And I've worked with a lot of okay ones, and they know how they need to get better. And you've worked with others where, like, it's just not going to get better. But it is something that I'm glad that I got exposed to early on, to be like, okay, so this is how I'm going to need to communicate to an announcer, host, analyst, to ensure that they do, you know, they can be the best they can be. And that all that's really based on trust and relationships, kind of like anything else. Everything we kind of do in television is based on common sense and advice that works, not just in broadcasting, but just in life, I think, whereas a lot of, you know, communication and trust is pretty key for what I do and what happens on the screen with all the guys talking, especially as you know, full circle back to the draft, like, we have nine main voices. That first night, we just got to make sure that they're all in sync. So really, my job is more like to give a clear picture for those who really can't. Like, my family still doesn't really understand what I do, but I would say it's more like conductor in an orchestra, or like a general manager in a football team, where I'm not necessarily calling the plays or playing the instrument, but I am trying to put everybody in the best position to succeed, which I think we're hopefully in that position as we get ready for Dallas in the draft.
And we talked a little bit off air about Inside Hollywood. A couple of guys that have been on the pod before, Jeff Conroy and others have talked about the Inside Hollywood program that Miami offers. You guys are involved in that too, right out in L.A.?
Yeah, so we've been, I've helped organize with Dr. Howard Kleiman, who's the greatest and one of my mentors back in the day. He contacts me pretty early on to lock in a date. And then the last 5 years, we've been able to get a keynote speaker here, which has been Chris Rose, who, you know, obviously works for us at NFL Network, does MLB Network.
And is coming on the pod in, I think, 3 weeks. But keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. He's the best. So he gives them, you know, he talks to the kids pretty open and honestly. It's a great program, something that I wish, you know, I had or even we had back in the day, because how great, and it's super competitive. So these kids are super bright. But to be out in L.A. and meet the likes of Conan O'Brien and, you know, there's just so many people out in Los Angeles that are well-connected, successful. Oh, by the way, they happen to go to Miami. So it's a good thing for them. I think I can't speak for anybody else, but it kind of reinvigorates me and inspires me too. It works both ways, just to know that, you know, these kids are hungry. They want what they want. It's a different generation. I keep forgetting sometimes that I'm 20 years older than them, which is sobering. But, you know, when you look at them, you wonder, okay, which of these 18 kids are going to be the ones that, you know, that shine from this group, because it is super competitive. I think they start to realize that when they go from place to place. But it's really about, you know, what they can control, which is their work ethic, you know, how nice they are. Are you on time? That sort of stuff. So we kind of remind them of that stuff too, that goes a long way. But yeah, it's an awesome program. And it's, I think the best one we had when I was there was the, you know, for the kids who could go abroad to Luxembourg.
Yep. Did you do that?
This one's, no, yeah, I mean, I was just eating and getting fat the whole time, pretty much. But look at me now. No, I'm still, I need to lose some pounds. But nevertheless, it's, that program is so great. And they're supported so well by the faculty and staff, too. That those, if any of them are listening, they should feel pretty fortunate that they got to either have done it or will do it down the line.
What do you think? You talked about being nice, and just it is definitely a tough world. And when I go back to campus, I'm amazed how smart and bright these students are. You walk through the business school Friday at 3 o'clock, and they're in these group conversations. And I can promise you, Friday at 3 o'clock, I was not sitting in the business school in group presentations. Is there something? If you picked one thing, is it an internship? Is it being nice? What would you pick that one thing for an 18-year-old or a 22-year-old who's looking to the future and are going to be working the next 20, 30, 40 years of their life?
Sure. You don't want to ever be punished for being young. And I've said that, I say this a lot because I'm not free of guilt. I've done a lot of stupid things in my life, and I probably will continue to do a lot of stupid things in my life. But the biggest difference, and you brought up social media, is in this day and age, if you're looking for any job, whether you're 18 or 22, just make sure your social's clean. You know, that's the biggest thing, that you want to make sure that there's nothing inflammatory on there. I understand how passionate people can be about politics and sports and everything else, but you just want to make sure that it's nothing that's going to get you really, like, will it raise eyeballs and will it affect any sort of employment down the line? Because believe me, as you know, everyone looks at everyone's social pages now, even in employment. And if there's something that makes you a less desirable candidate than someone else because of something you posted on Facebook or Twitter, it doesn't help your cause. So that's the biggest thing I'd say. And of course, yeah, and in general, be nice. That's one of the first rules I always instill for all the production that we do is, and I typed it out. It's like, have fun, be nice. If we can't do that, then what are we doing? Because at the end of the day, we're not landing planes. We're not doing surgery. We're creating television with a product that is by far the number one sport in this country. So if we can't have fun and we can't be nice to each other, I think, you know, then we got to figure it out.
Thank you, Charlie, for taking some time, literally minutes and hours before one of the biggest nights and weeks of the NFL calendar, the NFL draft. Wishing you and the NFL Network and the NFL best of success in the days ahead. Charlie, like many others, come on this pod and talk about storytelling, something everyone should keep in mind and something that's so important in how you think and how you communicate to family, friends, work colleagues, and just students and peers along the way. He's also one of several that have talked about the Inside Hollywood opportunity that Miami gives to students. If you're in Oxford now and a student, take advantage of it. Seems like it's a great networking opportunity when you're in school. Thanks again, Charlie, and thank everyone else for listening and sharing the good word of Beyond High Street. See you at Skippers.